Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's special election series. For the next 2 weeks, Tuesdays through Thursdays from 11 to noon, we will focus on local measures, state propositions, and key races in California. You can find yesterday's show about California's Proposition 15 at yourcallradio.org. We begin today's show by taking your questions about voting in California. What questions do you have about mail-in voting, ensuring your ballot is counted, and in-person voting? Early voting has begun. You should receive your ballot by next Friday, October 16th. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. To discuss voting, we are joined by Kim Alexander, president and founder of the California Voter Foundation, a nonprofit that works to improve the voting process in California. Hi, Kim. Welcome to the show. Hi, do we have Kim on the line? Hello, hello. All right. Well, I'm not hearing from our studio, so hopefully we will bring Kim on in just a couple of minutes. Why don't I give out the phone number again? If you have any questions about your ballot, there are a lot of questions this year because we are all receiving vote-by-mail ballots, whether we requested one or not. And you should receive your ballot by October 16th. If you don't get it by then, you should contact your elections office. I'm just going to read a little bit from the San Francisco Chronicle because they have a really important piece up, what you need to know about voting. So the good thing is, in California, you can still register to vote. There have been a lot of deadlines that we tried to get the word out in other states, but you can register to vote even on the same day. You can visit your county elections office, your polling place, or your voting center 2 weeks before the election and on election day to register to vote and then cast a provisional ballot. Your ballot will be processed and counted once the county elections office has completed the registration verification process. It would be great if this were the case across the country to be able to register even on election day. The other thing is, make sure that your information is correct. You can go to voterstatus.sos.ca.gov, and all of the information is there. You can also track your ballot just to make sure, if you do put it in the mail, that it arrived and that it was counted. And you can find links at yourcallradio.org. And I believe we do have Kim Alexander, president and founder of the California Voter Foundation. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Rose. How are you?
Hi. Well, it's great to hear you, Kim. It's been so long.
You know, probably since last election.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I hope you're doing well. Thank you for joining us. So, Kim, this is the first year that everyone in California is going to receive a mail-in ballot. How is that going so far?
Well, this is the week that they're all getting mailed out, so people are just starting to get their ballots delivered now. And, you know, I think it's, I hope it goes well. I mean, it usually, there's, in the larger counties, you have people saying, where's my ballot? It's taking too long. It does take longer in bigger counties sometimes, and other counties that are smaller, sometimes it takes longer because their mail goes through a circuitous route to get to the local folks. So people need to, you know, check their mailboxes, and like you said, they can sign up for ballot tracking if they want to verify that their ballot has been issued and is on its way to them.
And if people plan to fill out their mail-in ballot and send it in, what are some of the measures they should take to ensure that it is counted? Because we've been doing shows about the 500,000 primary ballots that were discarded this year.
Yeah, well, you know, one important lesson that just came up yesterday is before you do anything, you need to open your ballot up and look at it and make sure that you have the correct ballot, that you have all the contests you're entitled to vote for on your ballot. There are times when there are mistakes, and in fact, just yesterday, L.A. County announced that in one precinct in Woodland Hills, the voters there received ballots that had no presidential candidates on it. So that's a great example of what we recommend in our song, our new song that we just released about voting in this election is, you know, the first thing you got to do is open it up and check it out. You know, you also don't have to vote on everything on the ballot. I know there's a lot of propositions on the ballot, so people don't, you know, have to feel pressured to vote on everything. I think a lot of times people, especially who are younger and newer to voting in California, can get really overwhelmed by the number of choices on the ballot and feel like they're supposed to have a decision for everything. And you know, it's great if you can vote on everything, but even I sometimes skip some of those contests that are unknown to me. So, you know, we don't want people to feel like it's a test. And then we do want people to get their ballot in as quickly as possible. You know, we know there have been problems with mailed ballot delivery this year. We're hoping most of those have been worked out, but why take a chance? You know, the biggest problem we found in our county, in Sacramento, with ballots arriving too late wasn't that they were delivered too late by the post office, but that they were postmarked too late. And we suspect this is true in a lot of other counties, too. So you don't want to put your ballot in the mailbox on election day, because unless you're really paying close attention, reading the fine print on that mailbox, it may not get postmarked by that day. And even with our grace period we have for delivery in California, normally 3 days, now extended to 17 days, that's not going to help you if it's not postmarked by election day. So our advice is mail your ballot in a week before the election. That's what the post office is suggesting. If you can't do that, walk it in person, return it in person to a voting site, a drop box, your county elections office.
Okay, so just try to vote as early as possible. It's been amazing, Kim. Yesterday I saw huge lines in Ohio and Indiana. I think we're going to break records this year on early voting.
I think there's going to be a lot of early voting. I mean, people, I think, are hearing this message. But even with that, you know, we're a state of 21 million voters, and we have, as you mentioned, conditional voter registration now. And so in addition to those 21 million Californians who are already registered to vote, there are several million more who are eligible and entitled to vote and could show up and vote in those last 2 weeks after the registration deadline passes and on election day and file a conditional voter registration application and ballot. And so, you know, that means that the demands on voting sites could be very high, especially on election day among people who are, you know, new to voting, first-time voters, and are going to need extra time. So that's why people who know they're going to vote, we want them to use those ballots that they got, fill them out, get them in early if you can, walk it in person. You know, I think one of the biggest things that confuses people is we call these vote-by-mail ballots, but you actually don't have to return it by mail, and it's actually better to return it in person. If you go to a voting site, for example, and return your ballot, not only can you just drop it off and not have to wait in line, but they will look at it and make sure you've done two things. Number one, that you signed the envelope. That's a big reason that ballots get rejected. And the other is that you date the envelope, which is important. Not as big of an issue if you're dropping it off, but when you put it through the mail, if there's no postmark, if you've dated it by election day and you signed it under penalty of perjury, they will count your ballot. So that's one advantage of taking it in person. You can have someone look it over and make sure it's good to go.
Where should people go to find a close drop-off place?
Well, you know, the counties are now getting their voter guides out to voters. Those all have to be out by the middle of next week. So it's kind of, I think it can be kind of confusing because people get their ballots before they always get their voter guide that has all the information about the local contest. People are getting their state voter guides. There's basically three packets you're going to get. One is your voter guide from your county, get us the voter guide from the Secretary of State, and then there's your ballot packet, which is from your county. So you need really all three of those to help you vote. The ballot packet may well have a list of locations in it for where you can drop off your ballot. That would also be in the voter guide. And of course, it's on the county election website, it's on the Secretary of State website. We have a jump page on our site called Voter Tools, Check Your Status, that has all the lookup tools, including, you know, finding drop-off locations near you.
Well, if you
generally, it's government offices, libraries. Those are the types of places. A lot of supermarkets this year are providing ballot drop boxes, which is great because they're open late, but they're inside, so they're safer that way. And most county election offices have an external drop box at their county election office.
Right. And if you live in San Francisco, there is an outdoor place for you to vote. It's right by City Hall in front of the Bill Graham Auditorium. And if you don't feel safe getting out of the car, you can actually do drive-through voting, which I love. I think it's such an incredible option, especially for people who might not be comfortable sending it in, but are not comfortable voting in person. I'm looking at my ballot, which I got over the weekend, and the instructions say use a pen with dark ink. Can this be any color pen as long as the ink is dark? Like blue or red, I'm guessing.
Generally, it's black or blue.
Black or blue, okay.
Advised. You don't want to use pencil, but that's good for you to be reading the instructions. That's what we do want voters to do. And, you know, that's another mistake that voters will make. They might use a pencil or something like that's not going to read when that ballot gets scanned. Voters shouldn't worry about that. I mean, they should use the right type of writing instrument, but even if they don't, when these ballots come in, once your signature has been verified and your ballot is then extracted from your envelope, and that's all done in a way to protect your ballot secrecy. They don't associate the name on the envelope with the choices on the ballot. Once they've extracted the ballots, they go through a process of flattening the ballots and then reviewing the ballots to make sure that they will be correctly read through the optical scanner. So at that point, if you have used something that's not going to be picked up, they will darken your choices for you.
Signatures have come up a lot. One of the reasons why those 500,000 primary ballots were discarded is because the signature on the envelope did not match the signature on the record. And what we've been telling people is if you registered to vote online, your signature basically should look like the signature on your driver's license. Is that right?
That is exactly the advice that we give as well. Not everybody's registered online. Not everybody has a driver's license, and this question comes up a lot, and people are understandably really concerned about this. So a couple things that you can do to make sure that your signature will be accepted. Number one, if you're really worried about it, if you know your signature has changed for a medical reason or it's been 20 years since you've registered, you can go online and see if your last ballot was counted if you voted by mail. If you're really worried about it, you can fill out a new voter registration application. And if you do use the online system, you know that the signature on your driver's license will become your voter registration signature, and you can always refer to that when you sign your ballot envelope. We did this study of rejected ballots in three counties, Sacramento, San Mateo, and Santa Clara, and what we found across the board was that, you know, the rejection rate, I don't want people to be too freaked out about it. I mean, it's generally about 1-2% among the counties. San Francisco had a nearly 5% rejection rate in March, which the registrar attributed to people turning in their ballots too late. So that was very worrisome. But for the most part, you know, 99% of the ballots are getting counted. The ones that are getting rejected, unfortunately, are disproportionately those being sent in by younger voters. Mm-hmm. And their problems that they're having are they're getting their ballots in too late and their signatures are not matching. And young people have particular challenges that older, more experienced voters don't face when voting by mail. I mean, they're new to voting, they are not familiar with using the postal service, and they're not familiar with making a signature. They don't write checks so as often. So we really need to make an extra effort. We found young voters' ballots in those counties we looked at were rejected at three times the rate of the voters overall. So signature rejection is an issue. If you sign up for ballot tracking, will be notified if there is a problem with your signature. And even if you don't sign up for ballot tracking, thanks to a new law that California Voter Foundation and other advocacy groups advanced, we now have counties required to contact voters if they forgot to sign the envelope or their signature is found to not sufficiently match their voter registration signature and provide them an opportunity to submit a valid signature. And our study found that over half the voters who were contacted in those three counties in 2018 that had signature problems did send in a ballot signature and had their ballots counted.
And if you'd like to track your ballot, you can sign up at wheresmyballot.sos.ca.gov. It is on the California Voter Foundation website, and we've got a link at yourcallradio.org. Today we are speaking with Kim Alexander, president of the California Voter Foundation. If you have any questions at all about mail-in voting, voting in person, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Lauren writes, can I vote in person if I'm signed up to vote absentee? In past elections, I've dropped off my absentee ballot at a polling station on election night. Is that still okay, or do I have to mail it in?
That is such a great question. And no, you do not have to mail in the ballot that you were sent. You can return that ballot to your voting site just as you would. I think that's kind of the best of both worlds, although I really want people to turn in their ballots earlier than election day, because the ballots that get processed earliest will get counted earliest. And if there is an issue with your ballot, they can contact you as soon as possible and help you get your signature issues sorted out. But yeah, you absolutely can take that ballot in with you and cast it at your election, at your voting site. Some counties are letting you. I know at least Shasta County is letting people come in with those their filled out ballot that was sent to them, and they turn in the envelope and then they scan their ballot right there at the county elections office. They had 217 people do this on the first day of voting, and then you don't have to put it in an envelope or worry about whether your signature is going to be challenged or not. So people who really don't want to vote by mail, nobody has to cast a vote by mail ballot. You don't have to put your ballot inside an envelope in order to vote in this election. You can take your ballot and the envelope that you received to your voting site, turn it in, and they will issue a regular polling place ballot, and you can vote it there and put it in the box and be done with it.
Lauren also says, will there still be polling places in all neighborhoods? For example, there's one in my neighbor's garage in my neighborhood in the outer Richmond, or will that not be the case because of COVID? This year, and at least in San Francisco, Kim, we're still having, 588 polling places will be open in San Francisco on Election Day.
Yeah, this is where there's a lot of variety, Rose, in what we're seeing about what counties are doing to provide in-person voting. I mean, the good news is that voters have lots of options. Everybody's getting a vote-by-mail ballot. Anybody can go vote in their county elections office anytime between now and Election Day. And anybody will be able to vote on election day somewhere in their county. The variation happens in whether you're going to be in at a local neighborhood polling place and only have one place that you can vote, but it will be close to your house, or whether you're going to be in a vote center situation where you are able to vote at a site that is available to countywide or to a broader group of voters. If your county is doing the consolidated sites, there's going to be fewer of them, and it's going to be less convenient for you perhaps to get to them, but they have to be open for three additional days prior to election day. So it's kind of a trade-off. San Francisco is among other counties that are that have not moved to this consolidated precinct model that was done as a way for counties to deal with limitations of space and staff availability because of COVID. And even if your county is still doing the traditional polling place model like San Francisco is, there's a good chance that your voting site will have changed, because a lot of traditional voting sites are places like, schools and senior centers, and those are places where we don't want voters to be going and voting. So whatever your situation, you need to check with your county to know what your voting options are for voting in person, where you're going to be able to vote, and how many days you're going to have available to vote, because that's going to vary from county to county. But all counties will have voting sites open to voters on election day for sure between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m.
And Lauren, you can find an answer to your question about your neighborhood at sfelections.sfgov.org, sfelections.sfgov.org. I just played with the site, and it's really easy to navigate, and they did a really good job with it. So thank you so much for that question. Let's go to a caller. Let's hear from Leslie in San Francisco. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. Hey, my question is, in San Francisco, the ballots are going to be counted as soon as they arrive at the elections office. I was wondering if that was the same for all the counties in California, and if she has any information about the rest of the country, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you. Kim, were you able to hear Leslie?
Yeah, I heard her question. That's a great question. And there's been a lot of confusion about this, because the president has made comments about, if your county hasn't counted your ballot, you should vote again. Well, the counties don't count ballots until polls close. What they do is they process ballots, and they verify your signature. They, as I said earlier, will extract the ballots from envelopes, flatten them out, make sure that they're all going to be ready to scan. And basically anything that they receive up until the Friday before Election Day is going to be in the first wave of ballots that get counted. So if your ballot is, if they receive your ballot by the Friday before the election, which is October 30th, then you have a good chance of having your ballot be counted among the very first ballots. Once polls close, counties will take all those ballots that they've already processed, lay them onto their scanners, push the tabulate button, and then they get counted. And so that's why when you go onto the Secretary of State's website on election night, and you see counties posting results that are at 8:01 p.m. You're like, how did they do that? This is how they do it. They get all their early arriving vote by mail ballots and any over the counter ballots that they've received, such as I mentioned in Shasta, get those all ported into their vote tabulation computers and count those up first. So, you know, it's really important that we don't count ballots before. I think it's important that we don't actually count ballots until the polls close. You don't want to run the risk of someone being able to know how people have already been voting, or for there to be the appearance that people might know how people are already voting. That's also important to protect against. But I'm trying to get a handle, honestly, on what other states are doing. I know many of them do allow this processing, and actually our emergency legislation that the legislature enacted over the summer, it does allow counties to begin that administrative work, processing ballots, starting immediately. Normally, they have to wait till 10 days before the election. But this, because of COVID and concerns about delays, they are letting counties start that process sooner. So I'm hoping there's a resource somewhere that will tell us how that varies from state to state. I mean, one thing that, you know, we're seeing, and you mentioned the 500,000 primary ballots that didn't get counted, is, you know, there's, just like with a lot of aspects of the voting process, there is a wide variety in what's going on between the states. And, you know, one of the things we just did in California that I'm very proud of is our Secretary of State just put into place emergency vote, signature verification regulations that our counties are going to need to adhere to, that spell out how and when voters must be contacted if they have signature problems, and the criteria that counties must use to verify signatures. Other states are not that far along or advanced with their vote-by-mail systems, and many of them, you know, don't have a lot of experience processing large quantities of vote-by-mail ballots. So I think California is in a better position than other states, but it will be the case, because so many ballots are going to come inside envelopes that bear voter signatures that must be verified. It does take time to process and go through those ballots and make sure that, you know, we're counting as many ballots as we legally can and nobody is voting twice.
Right. Thank you for the question, Leslie. We have a question from Julie in Albany about signatures. Hi, Julie.
Thank you. Yes, my signature due to medical reasons has changed radically from I registered to vote, you know, decades ago. And I didn't catch the phone number or the website to check to see if my last ballot in the primary was actually counted. What can I do for this election to make sure, even though my signature is different, that it gets counted?
Well, I would advise you to update your registration. I would fill out a paper form, which you can call your county and ask them to mail to you, or you can pick one up at the post office. I would sign it. I would take a picture of that signature on the paper form. It sounds like maybe your driver's license signature isn't going to work for you if that was, you know, made some number of years ago. If you think you can match your driver's license signature, then you can do your registration online. You can also send a letter to your county to tell them what your situation is and provide your new signature, or call your county elections office and ask them what they would advise you to do.
Okay, and where can I... What's the website to get to re-register to find current signature?
Well, if you want to do it online, you can go up to the Secretary of State's website, which is registertovote.ca.gov.
Okay. Okay.
And we have on our website, as I mentioned earlier, we're at calvoter.org, and we have a whole section of our site called Voter Resources, and one of them is online voter tools, and it has links to where you can look up where your ballot, if your ballot was counted in the last election, where you can sign up for ballot tracking, and where you can register to vote or update your registration.
All right. Thank you so much, Julie. So a couple more deadlines and some more important information. California residents have until October 19th to register to vote. 117 million people did not vote in the last election. So if you know anyone who's not registered, please let them know that they have until then to register. And if they miss that deadline, they can register on Election Day at polling places and county election offices. I wish this were the case in every state across the country, Kim.
Yeah, it's another area where we see quite a lot of variety. And, you know, something that it's a perennial problem. I mean, every election, people are like, why are we all doing this differently? And, you know, we have this states' rights provision in our Constitution that lets states determine, you know, the details about how we conduct elections. And I think it's become apparent to many people now that, you know, it doesn't produce a situation where people are being treated equally across the country. And, you know, you can see that in the barriers some states put up for voting by mail. For example, some states you have to have an illness, or you have to be of a certain age, or, you know, you have to be out of town in order to cast a vote by mail ballot, or the deadline to request a vote by mail ballot is 2 months before the election, or you need a witness, or, you know, just all of these hurdles that you have to get over. And same thing with registration. I mean, that some states have online registration, some don't. And some states really are welcoming and make it easy for people to participate, and others make it more challenging. And that's why you see, you know, many groups pushing efforts to stop voter suppression. I mean, we're very fortunate in California. We don't live in a state where we have those hurdles, but there are many voters that struggle with those challenges to be able to connect with their ballots. And you look at something like Florida. I mean, the situation in Florida where the voters passed an initiative to restore felons' voting rights, and then the legislature passed a law saying, well, all of your fines have to be paid before you can do that, and just putting up another hurdle to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people that have been disenfranchised. So the struggle for voting rights is far from over in this country, that's for sure.
Well, thank you for all the work that you and your team do to make it easier to ensure that every vote is counted. And thank you so much again for joining us, Kim.
My pleasure. I hope people come to our website and watch our new election song music video that will make you smile and help you get you informed and help other folks vote too.
Well, we enjoyed it. We put it on our website.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
Thank you. Kim Alexander is president and founder of the California Voter Foundation, a nonprofit that works to improve the voting process in California. We've got the links. Make sure that you spread the word, especially to the young people in your life, because we want all votes to be counted. Coming up after a quick break, we will talk about the 12 measures that voters in San Francisco will be voting on. There are 12 on this year's ballot. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. It's a special election edition of Your Call. For the next 2 weeks, we will be live from 11 to noon, Tuesdays through Thursdays, to focus on the California ballot. If you live in San Francisco, you are voting on 12 measures. Yes, 12. The list is always very long. So joining us to go over these measures is Sonia Narang, a multimedia journalist and elections coverage manager at KALW. Hi, Sonia. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm excited to talk about some of these measures today.
Yeah, well, we're excited to have you. And I love every year that the news department puts together these election briefs. It's about 2 minutes. And it basically tells you what the measure is, and what will happen if you vote yes, and what will happen if you vote no. You all do an incredible job with those election briefs.
Well, thank you so much. Yes, we're trying to make these easy to comprehend, and digestible versions of all the measures are available on our website at kalw.org/elections. And we've been trying to outline the arguments for and against, as well as how much it will cost to implement these measures. So you can actually hear all of our 2-minute audio segments online.
Okay, so this is fantastic. Now, obviously, we're not going to go in depth over all 12, and I know that you want to focus on about 4 or 5. So what I'll do is just read a little bit from all of the measures, just to give people a sense of what they are. So if you do have your ballot, or maybe get some paper and take notes on these, and we'll go over as many as possible. So San Francisco Measure A, and I'm reading from the election briefs. Thank you, Babette Thomas, who put this one together. It's a proposal that takes on three major issues to address homelessness, enhance parks, open spaces, and recreation facilities, and improve street conditions. To pay for this, the city proposes to take out a bond of almost $500 million. So if you support this bond, you can vote yes on A. If you oppose this, you can vote no. So let's talk. One of the measures you wanted to talk about is Measure B. It proposes splitting off some of Public Works' responsibilities into a new Department of Sanitation and Streets.
Yes, that's right, Rose. So the Public Works Department has handled all sanitation issues in San Francisco, and this measure would actually create a new commission, and this would actually be able to focus more on sanitation issues. And to do so, they're going to move around 835 current Public Works employees to this department. But it is going to increase costs by about $2.5 to $6 million a year. And that's causing some folks, including the acting Public Works director, to worry about the expenses involved. However, a lot of the proponents are saying that this would actually allow a more intense effort to be placed on keeping city streets clean, and especially in areas that that are more heavily populated. It's also a measure that the San Francisco Laborers Local Union 261 are backing, and that local union includes city street cleaners, street and sewer repair crews, and pest control workers, among others. So it's a measure that would essentially create a new Department of Sanitation and Streets. This is a department that exists in many major cities around the country. However, some of the opponents do say that Public Works can handle this on its own, and there isn't a need for a separate department. So it really is a question on whether this should be separated from that larger Public Works Department.
All right. So that is San Francisco Measure B, Sanitation and Streets Department. Let's talk about Measure C, and that is Diversity on Boards.
Yes. So Measure C is an interesting one. It would allow for any San Francisco resident, no matter whether they're a citizen or non-citizen, as long as they're 18 years of age, legal voting age, to join up as a member of a board, commission, or advisory body. So currently, city government members have to show, approve U.S. citizenship. But with this measure, many of the advocates say that it would allow a lot of underrepresented groups to have more of a say in city government. So some of the groups that are backing this measure include Asian Pacific Islander groups, Latinx groups, and others. And city officials worry that the number of people of color serving on boards has been decreasing for the past 5 years. And this would allow for greater diversity, not just diversity in government, but also diversity in the kind of policies that San Franciscans create. So, you know, it's an interesting measure that would essentially open up the doors to any resident of San Francisco above age of 18 or above age 18.
And it's also being supported by the Libertarian Party of San Francisco. They say non-citizens pay taxes just like other residents. Therefore, the government should represent everyone and not discriminate. As you said, the San Francisco Latino Democratic Club, San Francisco Women Leaders, several labor unions, and the lead opponent is the San Francisco Republican Party.
Right. So the Republican Party believes that the best way for non-citizens to have a voice in government is by getting U.S. citizenship. So that's their perspective. But you're right. A number of groups, including the Libertarian Party, say that, well, everyone who lives in San Francisco and pays taxes in the city should be able to join these boards and commissions and serve in the government.
All right. So that is San Francisco Measure C, diversity on boards. And if you have any questions, I know a lot of people are just now getting their ballot. I got mine over the weekend. And it is very, very long. It's two-sided. We've got a lot of things to vote on in California and at the local level. And today we are speaking with Sonia Narang, a multimedia journalist and elections coverage manager at KALW, to go over the 12 measures in San Francisco. If there's one or more that you've been closely following, or if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Be sure to go to kalw.org and click on our elections coverage, and you can find all of the measures, thanks to the news department. Very, very easy to read or listen to, 2-minute overviews. So let's talk about Measure D. This is the Sheriff's Department oversight measure.
Yes. So this is a measure that we're actually seeing in a lot of cities. In fact, many cities are now coming to terms with how policing should be monitored in their cities, especially in the wake of the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis this summer. So in San Francisco, Measure D would aim to investigate misconduct within the sheriff's department. So this is specifically looking at the sheriff's department. And what it would do is it would create an independent sheriff's department oversight board, as well as an office of inspector general. So those sound like big name terms, but just to break it down, this board and this inspector general would be looking at misconduct within the sheriff's department. So what exactly does an inspector general do? Well, in this case, their duties would involve investigating the deaths of people in custody. So that would be in San Francisco's jails, or while they're held by the sheriff's department on their way to jail. And they would look at the conditions in which they're held. And this inspector general wouldn't be working alone. They would have an entire staff of investigators. And there's this proposal, Measure D, would include one investigator for every 100 sheriff's department employees. And those investigators would not include anyone who's previously worked in law enforcement. So there would be an impartial team. And it would cost about $400,000 to fund this quote unquote oversight board, and then another $2 to $2.5 million to fund the inspector general's office. And there's, again, both sides of the measure have come forward. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors is unanimous in their support for Measure D, because they strongly feel that this is going to provide the public with transparency, especially into investigations involving misconduct and abuse of people who are held in custody. But the opposition actually says that there is an internal affairs unit already within the sheriff's department, and this unit already takes a look at what's happening within the department. So this is an interesting measure. It's one that we'll see in various cities around the Bay Area. Various measures are addressing police or sheriff's misconduct across the Bay and across the country. So this is a very important one to keep your eyes on.
All right. So this is Measure D, the Sheriff's Department oversight. As Sonia said, San Francisco's Board of Supervisors unanimously back Measure D. Those opposed include the San Francisco Taxpayers Association. And you can find more information about this one at yourcallradio.org. So I know that you want to talk.
Just to correct the figure, the Inspector General's office cost would, they updated the information, so it would cost $1.4 to $1.8 million, up to $2.2 to $2.5 million. So the range is anywhere from $2 to $2.5 million.
Okay. And again, the duties would involve investigating deaths of people in custody and the conditions in which they are held. And that is San Francisco Measure D. So I know you want to go next to G. So let me go over E and F just quickly. San Francisco Measure E, police department staffing levels, thanks to Noor Bouzidi for this one. If passed, Measure E would allow San Francisco to make changes to the number of full-time police officers on its force. Since the early 90s, the city charter has required the San Francisco Police Department to maintain a minimum of 1,971 officers. Measure E would allow that number to fluctuate. It would establish a new process to determine how many police officers are necessary. And this calls for the SFPD to analyze staffing needs and recommend changes every 2 years. Let's see. Let's look at who opposes this and supports it. The president of the San Francisco's Board of Supervisors says the current minimum number of officers required is arbitrary. The board's majority say San Francisco should dispatch more social workers and counselors where they're needed instead of police officers. The San Francisco Taxpayer Association opposes this, and the San Francisco Republican Party chair, John Dennis, opposes it. Vote yes on Measure E if you want to. If you want San Francisco to make changes to the minimum number of officers, if you would rather have San Francisco stick to the current policing staffing, then vote no. That is San Francisco Measure E, police department staffing levels. San Francisco Measure F would overhaul business taxes, thanks to Sarah Sterland for this one. Local government leaders are aiming to soften COVID's blow to the economy by overhauling the city's tax structure. Measure F would eliminate the city's tax on how businesses pay their workers. This means taxes of any kind of compensation. It would also increase taxes on all revenue certain businesses generate from normal operations. These are called gross receipt taxes. Measure F would increase tax rates for some sectors like tech and real estate over 3 years, beginning 2022. The city says this will bring in about $97 million a year. The mayor and the Board of Supervisors back the measure, along with childcare centers, parents of public schools, and unions representing firefighters and healthcare workers and other frontline workers. The San Francisco Chamber of Commerce and business groups oppose these taxes. So this is San Francisco Measure F, overhauling business taxes. Let's go to Measure G, youth voting and local elections. Tell us more about Measure G, Sonia.
Sure, Rose. So Measure G is another measure that will make the process of voting and participating in government affairs more accessible to people. And this actually proposes to allow youth, so youth meaning age 16 and 17, to vote on municipal measures. And this would not affect state or national ballot measures. Essentially, 16 and 17-year-olds would be given the right to vote on city measures in San Francisco. And this is not new. In 2016, a similar proposal was on the ballot, but a slight majority of voters rejected it. So the idea returned this year in 2020. And supporters are saying that this actually would allow 16 and 17-year-olds who already are working and paying taxes to have a say in how tax dollars are spent. So many youth are contributing to society in a way, and they should have a say in local elections. This is what supporters are saying. They're also saying that decisions made by voters in local elections can affect young people. So, for example, measures that deal with topics such as education and transportation are of extreme relevance to 16 and 17-year-olds, and therefore they should have the right to vote on those particular issues. And another interesting idea is by supporters is that lowering the voting age can actually help increase voter turnout. And low voter turnout is an issue we're looking at during this election here at KALW. So this would be an interesting measure to watch if indeed lowering the voting age actually brings out more families of these young people to vote in future elections. And in this case, the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, all but one support the measure, as well as the Board of Education and youth groups, including Latinx advocacy groups and LGBTQ groups. But opponents which include the San Francisco Republican Party delegates, as well as its chairperson, argue that young people of age 16 and 17 are legally still children and could be swayed by outside pressure. So some of these Republican Party delegates are worried that social media could possibly sway young people under 18 and distract them from what's at stake. Also, they believe that teens shouldn't vote until they have real world experience. In terms of cost, this would actually have minimal additional cost to implement. So the financial office says that there's not much of an expense to put this into place. So it is an interesting measure. Youth voting is also something that is coming up in other parts of the Bay Area. So that's why I think that this is one to watch.
Yeah, this is really important, especially when you think about low voter turnout and the idea that it would get young people excited about taking part in elections. So that one is measure a G, youth voting in local elections. And we're going over the 12 measures in San Francisco with Sonia Narang, a multimedia journalist and elections coverage manager at KALW. We are almost out of time, but if you have a quick question for Sonia about any measure, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. We have a question about Prop A. Let's hear from Harry. Hi, Harry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yes. First of all, yes, I wanted to say that I don't understand why there are three different measures in one. It's very unfair because if we don't want to vote, say, to give more money to the parks, which, you know, we've seen Park Alliance ensnared in a corruption scandal, and we've seen incredible waste of money in terms of the way these bond funds have been spent in the past, and more privatization of our public spaces and so forth, we're forced to vote for all three. And I think that, you know, this is, and also I wanted to know if your guest knows which specific park projects are these going to fund, because I do remember that there was a bond measure to pave the streets and end up paving for this awful streetscape gentrification projects we have in eliminating bus stops. That's what it seems to have paid, because the streets don't seem to have been paved to the extent one would like. So if your guest can tell us what specific park projects are going to be paid for by this bond, that would be great. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And Sonia has not specifically focused on this measure, right, Sonia?
Right. I mean, in terms of that's actually a really interesting question. It is a 3-in-1 measure,
yeah,
which is confusing. You know, when you have three very disparate, parts of a measure, you have a measure that's looking at homelessness, parks, open spaces, and rec facilities, as well as streets. It's a lot to take in, and perhaps folks might be opposed to one part, but not opposed to the other part. In terms of what it would cover, I mean, you would have to look at the measure text to find out the specific projects, but in terms of parks, they're looking at upgrading open space and rec facilities. It would include, fixing up streets, things like ramps to curbs, street structures, plazas. But I would indeed have to look at the measure text to give you a sense of the specific street and park projects that do come under this measure.
Yeah, and also, Harry, according to the election brief, $207 million would expand housing and shelter for the homeless, along with facilities to treat substance abuse and mental health. $239 million would enhance neighborhood parks, community gardens, playgrounds, and more. But I understand we really should drill a little deeper there to find out who's going to make the decisions about how this money will be distributed. If you go to on the elections website, I'm there right now, and it looks like there's a number of documents you can open to find out more information. We'll try to find some more, and then we'll link it at yourcallradio.org. So thank you. Thanks so much for calling in, Harry. That's an important question. Let's talk about, we're almost out of time, San Francisco Measure H. It's called Save Our Small Business Initiative.
Yes. So this measure is especially intended to assist small businesses in San Francisco in the wake of the pandemic or during a pandemic that is affecting so many small business owners, from restaurants and cafes to shops. A lot of businesses are still getting less foot traffic due to the pandemic, even though some have been reopening in recent weeks. So this would make the process of getting a business permit a lot faster. So right now there's a lot of bureaucracy in getting a measure or getting a business permit to get approved. And this would speed up that process. It would also it would speed it up to about a month as opposed to several months. It's also going to allow businesses to become more flexible. For example, restaurants or cafes that are not yet doing indoor dining would be able to do a pop-up or extend their outdoor dining into parking lots around their building. It would also allow businesses that serve food to create co-working spaces for customers and become more flexible in how they are able to do business. This is really relevant in the time of COVID. And it will be interesting to see if it passes, what kinds of measures businesses take to open up in more creative ways. So the San Francisco Republican Party and Democratic Party are united in supporting this measure, which is one of very few in which you see both sides of the spectrum coming together. And small businesses of many kinds are also behind it. So it's received support from Black, Latinx, Asian American, and women-owned small businesses. But others think that proposed changes should be handled in City Hall instead of by voters. So this is one that will that's one to look out for, especially during the pandemic that's affecting us all.
So that is San Francisco Measure H. It's called Save Our Small Business Initiative. And Jeff, just briefly, there are two other really important tax measures. Measure I is a real estate transfer tax. It would double property taxes for properties sold at more than $10 million. And then San Francisco Measure L is the overpaid executive tax. Starting in 2022, if San Francisco-based company's highest-paid employee makes between 100 to 200 times the median salary of the local workforce, then the city would levy a 0.1% fee of the company's total revenues. And you can find detailed information about these measures at yourcallradio.org. Sonia Narang is an elections coverage manager at KALW. Thank you so much, Sonia, for going over these measures with us.
Thank you for having me, Rose, and good luck to everyone as they fill out their ballots.
Yes, thank you. Find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. This has been a special election series of Your Call.